The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
Sustainability is more than a buzzword in the world of architecture and construction. It's become an essential part of the building process. At UW-Milwaukee, the practice of sustainable systems has become part of our campus's DNA as faculty and students prepare for a world where energy efficiency, recycling, and repurposing become essential elements of daily life. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to explore how managing stormwater is taking on new forms on the campus itself. Joining us in the studio is Jim Wasley. Jim is the Associate Professor of Architecture and the Chair of the Department of Architecture at UWM, and we welcome you to today's program, Jim.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be here.
So Jim, as I do every day, I walk on that sort of northeast corner of campus, and there's this treasure, especially in spring and summer months and into the fall, of a wonderful garden that is at its root really a sustainable icon on campus.
That's true. That's the Spiral Garden, which is the heart of what I call the Pavilion Gateway Project. And if you think about back when the stormwater was first being looked on the campus by me, 2005-2006, the MMSD sponsored a master planning process that I led, the Pavilion parking garage was just being built, and that 500-car parking garage was a new, in my mind, front door to the campus that led you through all of the loading docks and the back door of the campus. And so what we proposed to facilities and what we actually got backing for was the idea of creating a stormwater interpretive path up through that back door of campus, past the power plant, past Kolache. And the heart of that is the Spiral Garden, which, like you said, is amazing now. The plants have just taken off, and some of those prairie wildflowers are now 10 feet tall.
It really is. And you talk about the sort of the back door of the campus because you do have the power plant there. But thanks to that garden, it almost looks like a front door entrance.
That was the goal.
Just bursting with these natural native wildflowers.
Everything in that garden, besides the weeds, and there are weeds, and we are constantly working on them, is native and often endangered species, and specifically also chosen to create habitat for birds and butterflies and the like.
So I'm sitting here praising how nice it looks, but really the purpose is not just to look nice, but to do the very important job of managing the thousands and thousands of gallons of rainwater that running off on that part of campus.
That's absolutely right. The parking lot next to that, Lot 18, that serves the power plant, that whole garden is designed to take water off of that parking lot. So it captures about a 2-acre area of impervious surface. And rather than that water all rushing into the storm drains all at once and ultimately causing trouble for the deep tunnel, but more specifically causing trouble at Edgewood Avenue, which is a low point and a place where there's frequent flooding, that water is now absorbed by the garden. A lot of it goes into the ground. A lot of it goes into the atmosphere. And it all is slowed down. And as long as it's slowed down, we've helped out the flooding because the pipes are big enough to move the water eventually. They're just not big enough to move it all at once.
And it's been there for a few years, but you've added some new elements this year.
We have. We keep trying to build out this vision of the Pavilion Gateway, which is a 4-acre pathway that leads all the way from the Pavilion parking structure up through that part of campus up to the heart of campus. And what we've just now added are two massive concrete cisterns that capture the roof water of the power plant.
I like to call them silos.
That's a nicer word, too. I think they're full of associations. A lot of those associations for me are agricultural. They remind me of things that you'd see out in the countryside. I also think of the Roman aqueducts because they are water infrastructure that architects have been obsessed with for 2,000 years, building structures that transport water.
So you've got now in the heart of this lovely garden area, these silos that are what, designed to hold more water or move water?
They do. They're essentially above-ground cisterns, and it's like a child's science experiment. There are two of them, and they're linked together underground by a pipe. So one of them very evidently takes water off the power plant roof, and you can see it pouring out of the building and into the cistern when it rains. And as it fills up, they fill up together because water seeks its own level. The other one has an overflow scupper that should, when those cisterns are full after a heavy rain, become a fountain in itself. So it will be flowing as long as the rain is falling. And then that is designed to hold originally two-year rain event, about 2 inches of water. We've had lots and lots of difficulties in the birth of this, and it's down to about an inch and a half of water, but it's still about 14,000 gallons of water that will be held back and then slowly drain out over about a 24-hour period. And that water will come out of a fountain that's in the middle of the garden. So that's the next exciting thing to happen. And actually today, we're just now filling the cisterns with water for the first time to test them. And I'm looking forward to about 8 o'clock tonight, I'm going to be able to go over there and flip a valve and see this jet of water come out of the garden. We've all got money on how high it's going to go. But it should be 10, 15, maybe 20 feet high. Jetting stormwater up, and that's going to let the water out of these cisterns slowly over time.
And so ultimately it stays there, goes back, and becomes part of the groundwater, and the goal is not to have any of it get into the sewer system.
Well, again, as long as it's slowed down, so we've held it back for 24 hours, we've achieved the primary goal. But as it comes out into the garden over time, that's also, it's being dissipated, and a lot of it will never go down the drain. Some of it may go down the drain, but again, it's at a very slow rate, and so it's really no problem for the bigger system to handle.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk about this project is not just because it's sort of a unique locale on our campus and really very, very interesting and pretty to look at, but it really has become symbolic of what communities around the country are dealing with as you see these once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-500-year flood, it seems, occurring every 10 years or so. I mean, there are huge issues now with what we do with this immense amount of additional rainwater and stormwater that is in our communities.
Sure. Well, the other way to look at the cisterns is that they're trying to illustrate a story that is the motto of the sign that's out there, which is that for the sake of the lakes, our concrete trees need green leaves. And what do I mean by that? The concrete trees represent what the sewage district calls the gray infrastructure. And the sewage district is very proud of the fact that we have the deep tunnel system. But that's all concrete. It's gray infrastructure. It's hidden. And it's fixed. And you can never make it big enough to accommodate those dramatic events. And with climate change, those dramatic events are coming more and more frequently. And so the system is rigid and it needs flexibility. And so if the concrete tree is the underground piping, putting leaves back on the tree is putting in these types of gardens, little distributed areas where water is kept out of the system for a while, is allowed to do wonderful things in the landscape. So that's what we're really trying to illustrate there. We see the concrete infrastructure. We see it festooned with these beautiful plants. And we say, for the infrastructure to work right, it really needs this layer of gardens surrounding it and on top of it.
Jim, are there any possible applications for these types of gardens with the cisterns in residential areas? You know, we big campus, you know, over 108 acres now, I guess, and you do have parking lots and you have a lot of concrete. Is there something in the future where I might look at a mini version of this in my suburban home?
Well, absolutely. The rain barrel program is essentially a mini version of this, or the cisterns are giant rain barrels. You could think about it that way. The cisterns, to me, are hopefully unique. I don't know anything quite like them in the way they're plumbed together to create a stormwater fountain. But the idea of storing water in a cistern or in a rain barrel and irrigating your lawn with it is something that, that people have been doing here and everywhere for a long time, and this the city would like to see much more of.
You've had a lot of support from the MMSD, the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District. Are they looking at replicating these type of projects elsewhere?
Yes. In fact, they have supported these projects as demonstration projects because we are a public institution and we're highly visible and we can make a big deal out of them. But their goal is to see these types of strategies maybe not as dramatic, but at all sorts of different scales. And I should also mention we're talking about residential applications, but many of the surfaces that the MMSD would really like to target are the big parking lots of businesses and factories and places where you have acres and acres of hard surface. So that requires big features and big gardens where a house might require something very small.
Yeah, you know, and not only would it seem to me to be, make sense in terms of managing the water, but you look at some of these parking lots with acre after acre of asphalt, and it's hot, and the plowing you have to do in winter. Wouldn't it be nice if you could sprinkle into a lot of these big, flat ranges of asphalt? Couldn't you imagine how beautiful it would be if we had more of these spiral gardens strategically placed?
Absolutely. That's been the vision for a long time that I've tried to implement on campus, but that the MMSD is promoting and that is really being promoted throughout the country. It's funny, we have very specific water issues, but we're really water rich. But these similar issues come up in very dry climates as well. Arizona, I was just looking at the master plan for the Arizona State University. You would think that's a desert. But when it rains, and it only rains once or twice, but when it rains, it floods because there's no inherent infrastructure built in. And so they're building very similar types of catchment basins and cisterns. Now, their goal is to store the water and keep the landscape alive because that's their only source of irrigation water. Here, it's really a luxury to be able to say we can make this a really lush, wet garden, but it's already a wet climate, so the plants are doing just fine.
Jim, is there ever any concern with the possibility that storing this water is going to create a breeding home for mosquitoes and other pests?
It's something that we talk a lot about, and we make sure that it's not a concern. That's part of the logic behind the cisterns draining over 24 hours is that they're not really set up to be full of water for a very long time, so the system dries out. So that's really the answer to that. I think my next goal, because I'm always looking to up the ante and make more sophisticated, complicated stormwater structures, the next level of sophistication would be to have a water feature like a fountain that had recirculating water that the cisterns were used to hold and recirculate water. And there are tricks. There are things that you do to make sure that they don't create problems.
Because the key is moving that water.
Absolutely.
You know, the mosquito larvae will stick around if it's just sitting still.
Yeah, you move it and you filter it, and you can do all kinds of things without adding chemicals to it, which would be the one thing that we don't want to do. We want to try to make these ecological. And that's really the person I'm following as an inspiration and somewhat of a mentor is Herbert Dreisaitl, who is a German artist, stormwater artist. We've had here at UWM several times. He taught a design studio with me several years ago as the Urban Edge critic. And his work has pioneered this use of rainwater in public water features treated without chemicals. So I think of them as chemical-free fountains, but you could also say they're stormwater mitigation strategies.
You know, in your world, in architecture, which is ultimately the place where you have the genesis for these new ideas, new approaches, I could imagine that you must wake up some nights thinking of new ways in which you could go ahead and deal with that water. I mean, think of all the commercial buildings that your students will be designing over the course of their lifetime. Do you talk a lot about that in the classroom when you're teaching students?
Well, I'm teaching a course on the design of waterscapes this fall, which is a new seminar that I'm working on with actually John Jansen, a faculty at the School of Freshwater Sciences, because down there we're actually trying to design one of these permanent water features, although there the situation is slightly different in that we've got this amazing source of water, the wastewater or the process water, I should say, flowing through the aquaculture facilities, 500 gallons a minute 365 days a year is being flushed through the building and out into the lake. And we're trying to capture that water and create a stream that will lead fish to the front door of the building. So there you're talking about designing water features, designing aquatic habitat, helping the EPA address the area of concern designation for the harbor. And the students are going to be running through possibilities and helping explore that, both architecture students and biology students. So I'm very excited about it.
And we should remind our listeners that the facility that Jim is talking about is the brand new addition to the School of Freshwater Science on Greenfield Avenue. So if you're brave enough to go down Greenfield, they haven't finished repaving it yet. It's some big changes coming there. But soon, I think next spring, they'll be ready to open up this $55 million facility that will be really unique, certainly in the Americas and perhaps in the world in terms of understanding and analyzing, studying our freshwater systems. So that building is coming, and Jim, as you point out, your vision for how to move water through that building, out of that building, could become truly a unique thing to look at.
Well, I'm hoping we can find the funds to actually implement these ideas. Right now they are just ideas, but we've got a master plan for that campus as well as this campus now. That's 9 acres of both city street, because we are working with the city, and the campus itself, which is the building and the parking lot. We have some funding to build an initial, or we've got about half the funding we need to build some stormwater test cells along what will eventually be the parking lot for the building. And those will allow the campus to run experiments on street trees and help the city expand their palette of street trees into trees that really like stormwater and soak up a lot of water. And then there's the fountain and the features themselves. The other feature that I'm really excited about is the idea of an irrigated green roof that would also take some of this aquaculture water and pump it up to the roof and create bird habitat on the roof. So we've got green roofs on campus. This would be a green roof with a river running through it that would attract waterfowl and really create a very dramatic, symbolic association between the building and the landscape and the idea that this is a water hub.
You're listening to UWM Today on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio is Jim Wasley. Jim is the chair of the Department of Architecture at UW-Milwaukee, and we've been talking about his efforts to both understand and build out new systems to manage stormwater. And certainly over the last few years with the those once-in-a-500-year floods that I think have come a couple of times, a topic that that I think a lot of our listeners can appreciate. Jim, you mentioned the work that you and students are doing looking at our School of Fresh Water, the Harbor Campus down on the south side of downtown Milwaukee. But you also have a more ambitious, a bigger project looking at that entire inner harbor. And I wonder if you could give us an update on where you stand with that initiative.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the third or the sixth semester of inner harbor work, the third and final year of the project, which will come to a conclusion at the end of this semester. So we've had some very generous sponsorship from the BRICO Fund, and I was on your program probably 2 years ago talking about kicking this off. We've now run over 30 classes, several hundred students, actually classes on our campus, on the Madison campus, and down at IIT, because we have an adjunct who teaches here who also teaches down there. Illinois Institute of Technology, and they have a landscape program, as does Madison. So the goal has been to look at the entire inner harbor, essentially the area from First Avenue to the east, from the Hone Bridge south down to where KK crosses the KK River Bridge. There's a lot of industrial brownfield land in there. And if you think about it, it's very much like the Menominee Valley was 10 years ago. But inherently, in my mind, and in the minds of the people behind the Inner Harbor Project, it has a lot more ultimate value because it is on the waterfront. And cities all over the world have redeveloped their port areas. And not that we're talking about displacing the port, but we think that we can do a lot to densify the area around the port to add mixed uses, because industry of today is not industry of the early 19th century. And the idea of water technology hubs, of mixed use living in industry, all of those things play into this vision of rebuilding up the inner harbor area. The other key component of it is exactly this stormwater issue and the other environmental issues behind it, that there's a lot of ecological damage down there and a lot of restoration that needs to be done, as well as a lot of economic development. And we are trying to make the case that those two things go hand in hand. We need the economic development to do the ecological restoration. We need the ecological restoration to make the place livable. And that's how it all comes together. So what we're trying to create is a vision of a really green future for the city.
And this really fits very nicely with the upcoming September launch of the Global Water Center, which will be opening over on 1st and 2nd in Pittsburgh, I guess it is.
Sure.
That wonderful 7-story warehouse that has been converted into, again, I don't want to use superlatives, but a one-of-a-kind facility that brings together UWM water engineers along with people from a lot of companies throughout southeastern Wisconsin interested in developing that water industry, creating new products, new services, and again, be sort of one-of-a-kind.
Mm-hmm.
And they also are talking about building out on that Reed Street site, the big brownfield adjacent to that building, which listeners will be hearing a lot about, I suspect, in a few weeks. They're talking about that perhaps being a demonstration area for something called the Purple Pipe Program.
The Purple Pipe, indeed. The Purple Pipe is a universal symbol for piping that carries gray water or reclaimed water so that it's not potable, you can't drink it, but that it's being captured and reused. And they're talking about lots of different possible technologies down there. The most ambitious would be to actually have a small waste treatment plant that captured the sewage from the Reed Street Yards development, which is all Water Technologies Industries, and treats it on site. And this is not a pressing need in Milwaukee, but it's a pressing need technologically in many places around the world. And the types of businesses they're trying to attract are the types of businesses who would be developing and selling this technology. So the goal of actually having one of these small packaged waste treatment plants and treating the water makes a lot of sense in terms of making that a showroom.
You know, thinking back 10 years when you talked about the Menominee Valley as it was just beginning to evolve, and my, look how it's changed with new companies, jobs, a lot of recreation there. Can you imagine in 10 years a similar evolution occurring in that inner harbor area? Or are we
Yes.
20 or 30 or 50 years off?
I would like to think it's going to happen tomorrow. I really think it's got promise. And I've had people at the city tell me that the northern side of the harbor is essentially an extension. You could think of it as an extension of the Fifth Ward. And all of those industrial buildings in there, not all, I shouldn't say all, that's a categorical. But many of those buildings, developers have their eyes on, have options on, and it was only the economic collapse that prevented that development from already starting to move down into the northern side of the inner harbor.
Because the Third Ward development, which started, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, look at how remarkable that has reshaped downtown Milwaukee with condos, literally thousands of condos where there once were warehouses.
Sure.
And so that same, so that gentrification is sort of perhaps creeping south as a result of these forces combining?
I think it is, and I think our vision is to say that it doesn't just have to be condos, it could be businesses, it could be industries, light, clean industries, but water-dependent industries. But the thing, for example, just picture this. This is one of the things that we're trying to develop to tie it all together. One of the things that made the downtown resurgence visible to people is the Milwaukee Riverwalk. And one of the things that made the Third Ward really pleasant is the extension of that into the Third Ward. What we're hoping to do is extend that Riverwalk concept into a harbor walk, that the western bank of the harbor, not the port facilities, but the other side, the side that's attached to the city, that should be publicly accessible, and it should be a harbor walkway just like the river walkway is. And when you put that in place and you think about the School of Freshwater Sciences being in the middle of it, there's a DNR boat launch, which is a small but significant public foothold at the northern end. And at the southern end is the Grand Trunk Wetland Restoration, or what we're now calling the Bayview Wetland. There's an actual protected wetland on the Grand Trunk Railroad site. This is port property. And the city and the port and the university have been working to develop a plan to restore and actually create a sesh wetland there, a wetland that's connected by the sloshing of the lake to the lake and will have fish spawning habitat. And so, again, this idea that the ecological restoration is going to help drive economic redevelopment.
Put a bike path through all of that area, and I'm all in.
Well, and there's a bike path running down the railroad tracks as we speak. That's the, I don't know if that's the KK River Trail extension. And I haven't ridden it yet. I think it's either under construction or maybe even it's passable by now.
Just a couple of minutes left, and I do want to go back to the notion of how students benefit from this. Do you see students who are going through these programs thinking these wonder, dreaming these wonderful dreams of what that part of Milwaukee might look like in 10, 15 years? Do you see them staying here and working in companies or maybe starting companies to see those kind of projects through? Or is this something that you get a taste of as a student and then go on to build something else?
I hope it's both. I certainly look at other areas of the city that the School of Architecture and Urban Planning has been involved with. The whole freeway demolition downtown.
Park East.
Yeah. Blanking on the name. But we ran design studios for years on what to do with Park East properties. And Peter Park was actually the city, what was his
city
title?
Planner, yeah.
City planner, yeah. And ran the joint degree program at Sarah at the same time. And he worked through a lot of his public policy and planning and design issues for the city using students. And as those things unfold, those students are now 20 years into practice here, and they know those sites well. And so I would like to say that a lot of the same students are coming back 20 years and working on the projects that are physically transforming those sites.
And it really can make a difference, not just in their career. That would be wonderful, but the real winner is the city, the people in the city.
Oh, sure. And the work that they do, the work that students do is, I think, helpful right from the beginning just to create an image of what it could be like and to work out some of the basic problems so that policymakers can make, you know, intelligent decisions just by having a few stabs at it that don't have any penalty associated with
them. And with young people, people who haven't been taught to say it can't be done.
Absolutely.
You know, the beauty of youth, right? Why not?
Yep.
Why
we not? Try to harness that at every occasion.
Well, Jim, we really appreciate the update on that Inner Harbor project and your new venture. If your folks are out near the UWM campus, head over near that pavilion parking area. And if nothing else, come and enjoy the butterflies and the absolutely really, really cool post-stamp scene of these native wildflowers helping to take care of that groundwater. Well, that's all for this edition of UWM Today. We thank Jim Wasley, the chair of the Department of Architecture, for being our guest. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.